A historic night of Champions League football saw the first league phase draw to a dramatic conclusion. All 36 teams kicked off at the same time and 27 of them had something to play for. At the top, Liverpool pipped Barcelona to first place. It was Arsenal, Inter, Atleti, Leverkusen, Lille and Aston Villa who secured a top eight spot in the end and automatic progression to the last 16. Nine clubs vied for the final six knockout phase playoff positions: PSV, Paris, Benfica, Manchester City, Sporting and Club Brugge were successful. So the league phase is done and dusted. It's been more dynamic and more unpredictable right to the last whistle and beyond on match day eight. We'll do our best to review it all. Hello, I'm Chris Parrott, and as the dust settles in our 18 venues across Europe, we have quite a night to look back on. I'm delighted to be joined by the European football expert, Kevin Hatchards.
Hello.
And the football commentator, Richard Connolly.
Hello, Chris.
And our star reporter, Mike Sewell.
Hello.
And we have a lot to get through. So let's try and be succinct and try and get to all of the storylines. 18 matches, more than 60 goals, storylines everywhere. Here is how a historic night unfolded. 144 unique matches will be played in this league phase, the final 18 taking place simultaneously tonight. It all comes down to this: who's going to finish in the top eight? Who's going to be seeded for the knockout phase playoffs? Who's going to go through but be unseeded? And who is going to be eliminated?
3 minutes in, Inter have a penalty. It's going to be Lautaro Martinez, and he drives it into the centre of the net, and Lautaro Martinez gives Inter the lead.
Dinamo Zagreb are leading Milan, and they, with that goal, have currently jumped above Stuttgart into the top 24. What an achievement that would be.
And if you had a pound tonight every time one of us says "as things stand," you'll be a very rich listener by the end of the evening.
Cody Gakpo, on his return to Eindhoven, has scored a penalty against PSV. Paris have a third away at Stuttgart. Ousmane Dembélé 3-0 up, a high-pressured night for them. They are currently flying into the top 24.
Down the near side, he's beaten Nunez. All ends up. Into the box goes Jutla. Can he find the pass? He can! And Brugge scored! And Manchester City are in serious trouble now. The Belgians ecstatic. A wonderful goal. It's Manchester City 0, Club Brugge 1. De Bruyne picks up the corner short, curls a beautiful ball in! And the header's wide by John Stones.
This goal will have huge implications. Barcelona 1, Atalanta 0. It means that Barcelona have gone top of the league phase table.
Kovacic has scored for Manchester City. Mateo Kovacic drove right through the heart of the Club Brugge defence, and Manchester City still believe it is City 1, Club Brugge 1. Lovely ball, Savinho, Guardiol, tight angle, and a goal! An own goal of Ordonez, and Manchester City have turned it round! Manchester City surviving now, lead Club Brugge by 2-1.
Dinamo Zagreb are back ahead. Marco Piazza has scored against 10-man Milan. It moves Dinamo Zagreb back up into the top 24.
Ollie Watkins behind the ball, which is on the penalty spot. Watkins right foot, oh, he slips! And he chips the ball over the crossbar. Like a sand wedge in golf, he clips it high over Kasper Schmeichel's crossbar.
We always had late drama on the final night of the group stage.
Stones sweeps out a ball to Savinho. He's in, Savinho! It's a marvellous goal from Savinho for Manchester. Manchester City and feel the relief. They've come from a goal down to lead by 3-1.
Sporting have just equalised at home to Bologna. That changes everything for them and for Dinamo Zagreb. Sporting now back up into the top 24. Liverpool have been beaten, but tonight they have secured first place. Club Brugge have done it, courtesy of their goal difference. Dinamo Zagreb's 2-1 win at home to Milan wasn't enough, and Club Brugge become the final team to qualify for the knockout phase of the UEFA Champions League. Yes, things changed from minute one until well after the full-time whistle at the City of Manchester Stadium, and we've on air now, what, 10 minutes after the full-time whistle, and they're still bouncing in front of their travelling supporters, Club Brugge and their coach. Doing a bit of a dad dance on the pitch, but he deserves that after engineering a terrific campaign and through despite the defeat. Richard Connolly and Kevin Hatchard, you were, as well as keeping an eye on everything, you were commentating on the game between City and Club Brugge. If we go back to the beginning of the night, let's take a look at those nine clubs who were hoping, well, there were nine clubs, but there were six final spots to be determined in terms of who finished 24th and above and therefore extended their European season.
Yeah, it was brilliantly set up because we had nine teams in the big picture looking for six places. There were three at the start of the night who were outside trying to get in, and one of those was Manchester City. They knew that they had to win. It was their only route through. But if they did so, then they would qualify. For Club Brugge, a point and they'd be certain of qualifying. A win, they were away and over the hill. But if they lost, their position was in jeopardy and they were worried. Might it come down to goal difference? There was another key game involving Stuttgart and Paris. They were both just above the line as the night got underway, although Paris very quickly moved into a very strong position and left Stuttgart right on the line in danger. Manchester City then, of course, went behind against Club Brugge. Brugge playing largely on the counter-attack in the first half, but playing superbly well, keeping City at arm's length. And at half-time, Kevin, Manchester City were in serious danger, needing to score twice in the second half. And it was really looking like the story of the competition could well be their exit at the group stage.
And the thing that ultimately changed the game was a bold substitution at half-time from Pep Guardiola, because he took off Gundogan, he brought on Savinho, who we said at the time is the kind of guy who can break a block and create those spaces. And that's exactly what he was able to do. And straight away, he won a couple of corners, the Brazilian winger in the first couple of minutes. And Brugge, for the first time, were on the back foot. And those spaces started to open up. The equalising goal comes from Kovacic driving at that Brugge team. Onyedika, who'd scored a brilliant opener for Brugge, gets dragged out of position, can't get back in time. It was a really clever decoy run by Kevin De Bruyne. Fine finish and 1-1. And then the goal that gives them a 2-1 lead and puts them in front for the first time and puts them in that top 24 for the first time is again Savinho involved. Nice little flick through to Guardiola, who's run off his marker, fizzes it across the face of goal, and it's turned in by Ordóñez. And then Savinho scores third, and at that stage City have wrapped it up. So Pep Guardiola, one of the great coaches of his era, made a key change at half-time that completely changed the match.
And you could see the pressure and then the relief as those goals went in. Elsewhere, it was becoming increasingly interesting. You mentioned there Paris Saint-Germain, who were, again, a big club with aspirations of going far, a great recent history. They were another team who were really in jeopardy, and you wonder whether their exit might be the story. Actually, their 4-1 win ultimately away at Stuttgart, a hat-trick for Ousmane Dembélé, meant they were very comfortable in the end. And it was amazing, really. They've actually finished 15th. And will be seeded in the knockout phase playoff. But, and we'll speak a bit more about them. So they were kind of out of the picture. So then, along with Manchester City and Club Brugge, it became about Dinamo Zagreb's performance and result at home to Milan and Sporting's result at home to already eliminated Bologna.
Because we knew Benfica were winning that point away at Juventus, so they were making themselves safe. Dinamo Zagreb were doing so well, beating 10-man Milan, went 1-0 up, got pulled back to 1-1, then went 2-1 up. And at that point, Sporting were behind against Bologna and falling away. The key then moment then was Sporting equalising against the Italian side, Sporting then pushing Dinamo Zagreb outside the top 24, even though they were beating AC Milan. Club Brugge would have had a bit of a nervous moment because by then they were only surviving on goal difference, which altered the shape of our match again a little bit, because Club Brugge were thinking, right, should we then move to damage limitation? Because if we concede a hatful, and the game was quite basketball-like in the second half, both sides were throwing men forward. City had to win the game. Club Brugge felt they had a chance of scoring and getting the point that they knew they needed to make it absolutely safe. But then they twigged, they were told, if we lose this 5 or 6-1, we might go out on goal difference.
Yeah.
And the match changed again.
And there was a really funny moment, actually, where Club Brugge had retreated to their kind of mid-block and were saying, right, we won't press now. City realised the situation they were in and started to keep possession, have control. And Erling Haaland decided, I'm fed up with this.
Yes.
I want to get involved. He came all the way back to the centre circle, took the ball and fed Phil Foden, who nearly scored right at the end. But it shows you the passion and enthusiasm that Haaland has, that despite the bigger picture, all he cared about was the much smaller picture of, I haven't scored, I quite like to score.
Yeah. Also, there was the one other caveat, is that I guess City went into the game, it was crystallised, if we win, we're through.
Yeah.
But if we don't, we're not. So from their point of view, it's like, well, we might want one more just to make it safe. So both teams were kind of working out live, what do we need to do, what don't we need to do? It was fascinating to watch the end.
The other piece of the puzzle that we haven't quite provided yet is that it wasn't a straight story of City were 1-0 down at half-time and came back to win 3-1. Actually, once they'd equalised, Club Brugge continued to hit on the counter. Christos Zolis forced Ederson into a really good save and clipped the outside of the post when it looked as though he was going to score. And there was a moment where Zolis had broken through the middle, showed great presence of mind, actually, with Ederson coming towards him to actually turn away from goal and set up Van Aken. And it was only Ederson making a great sprawling save that kept City in a decent position at that stage. If any of those chances had gone in for Brugge, then we might have been talking about City being eliminated.
Yeah, so City ultimately won the game. At the full time, they knew they were through. I would suggest it was relief on Pep Guardiola's face mostly, as well as, you know, very pleased with the second half display, which was excellent for Manchester City. So then it became a waiting game for Club Brugge. And we saw in their 3,000 fans, all of them got their phones out and were like, OK, which of the results do we need to look at? Where are we in the live league table?
I mean, at that point, because the Dinamo Zagreb-Milan match was several minutes behind, it wasn't inconceivable that Dinamo could turn 2-1 to 5-1 and that would have knocked Club Brugge out. But as every second ticked by, that looked less and less likely. Dinamo were reliant on Bologna getting a winning goal against Sporting, which never came. With that match ending a draw, Dinamo were finishing below Sporting and did need those three goals in added time to save themselves, which was way, way too far beyond them. So at that point, poor Dinamo, despite winning on the final day, were out. Sporting were safe with their point. And both Manchester City and Club Brugge could celebrate both had qualified.
And ultimately, Dinamo may well look back at conceding 9 goals all the way back on match day one in terms of the hit of the goal difference. And we mentioned right at the beginning, and, you know, every goal is going to matter. And when it comes to next season, when you know clubs are going to look at all the data and what happened, there's going to be learnings from this first league phase. And despite a terrific performance, winning 3 games, Dinamo, they go out on 11 points, one of 4 teams to finish on 11 points. But because of their goal difference, they finished 25th.
But it would have been remarkable if they qualified, because you mentioned they lost 9-2 against Bayern. They made their first coaching change of the season after that. Nena Bjelica came in. Mm-hmm. He went out then. Fabio Cannavaro's come in. So that would have been an early piece of league phase trivia for us to have three coaches in the same league phase.
Yeah, so, right, to sum it up then, ultimately, the unsuccessful trio of the nine hoping to finish in the top 24 were Shakhtar, who were beaten at Borussia Dortmund, Stuttgart, who, as we mentioned, lost at home to Paris Saint-Germain, and Dinamo, just pipped by Club Brugge. So they're through.
And the six of the nine that did make it, PSV, Club Brugge, Benfica, Paris, Sporting, and Manchester City.
Hope that is clear about what happened at the lower end. So all of those teams that Richard just mentioned are through on Friday to the knockout phase playoff draw. Some seeded, remarkably.
Yeah.
Despite not being through ahead of match day eight, they managed to jump up enough to be seeded. Others, including Manchester City, not seeded, but just very happy to be in the draw and have their European season extended. There were only really a couple of games, two games with nothing on it in terms of who might go through or placings or seedings. That was the game in Bern, which Young Boys lost at home to Savena Zvezda. Fantastic winning goal. Go and look at that on UEFA.com and the official Champions League app. And in Austria, Sturm Graz beat RB Leipzig by 1-0. So Sturm Graz actually moved up to 30th in the live league table, onto 6 points. Ultimately, Young Boys with that defeat, with a side that finished bottom, having lost all of their eight games. Okay, that is what happened in terms of finishing 24th and above to extend the European season. Next, we're going to go all the way to the top of the league phase table and tell you exactly what happened there.
Take UEFA Champions League Match Day Live with you, wherever you go. With audio commentary, real-time stats and much, much more, get the complete experience and download the official Champions League app today.
Okay, coming into match day eight, Liverpool led the way with 7 wins from 7. They knew that a point would be enough to guarantee winning the league phase and becoming the first ever league champions. They were actually beaten in the end by PSV Eindhoven. Mike Sewell was keeping an eye on everything at the top. This game was an absolute thriller. A lot of the pre-match narrative was about Cody Gakpo heading back to Eindhoven, and he got on the score sheet, Mike, but it was a memorable night in terms of goals scored.
It certainly was, and it was an excellent victory for PSV. It didn't change the fact that Liverpool ended up winning the league phase ahead of Barcelona, who were the only other team who could have pipped them to that. And Barcelona at one point were top. In fact, at 2 points, they were top of the league phase table, with Liverpool losing in the Netherlands. They twice took the lead against Atalanta, only to be pegged back. But in the end, it was what was happening around Atalanta that became the most fascinating part of that top eight, because Inter and Atleti both scored 2 goals each inside the first and the midway point of the first half to put themselves in a strong position just behind Arsenal. So it meant then that there were 3 places left for 8 clubs, and there was only a point between them in the end. And what it meant was that Lille and Aston Villa scored very early on. Villa scored 2 goals through Morgan Rogers inside the first 5 minutes, so that kept and put them in the top eight. Leverkusen also jumped in there when they took the lead in their game. And then it had a situation where Atalanta had dropped out because they were trailing at Barcelona. Dortmund, Real Madrid and Bayern München were all leading in their games, but they needed to rely on what was happening above them and also below them in a way, because Milan, they were losing in their match. Had they come back to win that game, they would have jumped into the top eight and finished in the top eight. And it all came down to the end between Villa and Atalanta, because Lille's 6-1 win against Feyenoord actually gave them a better goals scored record than Villa. They had the same goal difference, but they were above them on goals scored. So it really put Villa in a precarious position, even though they eventually went on to win 4-2. They missed a penalty. Morgan Rogers completed his hat-trick. But had Atalanta scored late on away to Barcelona, and completed a comeback, they would have ended up in the top eight. It was that tight in the end. And in terms of Dortmund, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, they just needed to score more goals and hope that other things went their way.
Mike, so much knowledge.
I hope it made sense, because it was an exhilarating night. I mean, my pulse has dropped quite considerably since the end of the games. But it was absolutely fascinating.
I mean,
with all due respect, we certainly didn't have it with this amount of games in the group stage. But to have so many games riding on these positions was fantastic. And we're in for a bit of a treat in the... in the playoffs and then the round of 16 with the way things have panned out.
We're going to go into that shortly.
Can I just add one more thing,
yes,
Chris? Basically, all four of last season's semi-finalists finished outside the top eight.
Very good point from Mike Sewell, yeah, which just shows the quality of European football and some of those names who are going to be in Friday's draw in the knockout phase playoffs. We're going to touch and go a bit deeper into some of those scorelines that Mike mentioned shortly. We'll head back to Liverpool shortly because they have won the league phase and will always be the first winners of the league phase. And we can hear from their goal scorer, Cody Gakpo, who made his return to Eindhoven and says it was still a special night for him despite being on the losing end of the game.
Very grateful that even though it's 2 years ago already, I still have a lot of fans here. So I'm very grateful for the supporters, what they did, and I will never forget that. It was a special night, but at the end, unfortunately, we didn't get the win. But I think we fought hard, and even when we went down with 10, we tried to keep playing, and we had some good moments, but at the end, disappointed about the result, but for myself personally, it was a special night, yes.
Cody Gakpo, so to reiterate, Liverpool, the winners with 21 points. They finished 2 points ahead of Barcelona, who couldn't quite find the winner against Atalanta, which would have seen them jump to first. Lamine Yamal, by the way, the UEFA player of the match in that one. Third were Arsenal. They began the night third and were pretty much there because of their goal difference, but they absolutely sealed it with a come-from-behind win away at Girona. And we can hear from their boss, Mikel Arteta, now. The winner was scored by Ethan Nwaneri, and he was very happy with his young forward.
That's what we love about him. You know that he's willing to take the initiative to make things happen. He's very aggressive when he's got the ball, and so confident, because you don't do that. Because before that, he had another action, very similar one. He made the right choice. He went for it. He's a player that has the capacity to finish from every angle, basically, and it was a very important goal.
Yeah, a special talent that Arsenal have on their hands. So they finished third. Fourth in the end were Inter, who beat Monaco by 3-0. Another clean sheet, Kev. Extraordinary. They conceded one goal in 8 games in the league phase and a hat-trick for a brilliant centre-forward, Lautaro Martinez.
It's why they are a live contender to win the thing, because they got to the final 2 seasons ago. I thought they played incredibly well in that final against Manchester City, came so close to actually lifting the trophy. And you look at them now, you've mentioned Lautaro Martinez there, hat-trick for him, but you've got Marcus Thuram, you've got an incredibly well-balanced midfield with lots of options. And as a unit, they defend incredibly well. One of the most experienced goalkeepers in the competition, in Jan Sommer. They are going to take some shifting, they really are. And, of course, they're already through to the last 16.
They benefited also from the sending off of Christian Mouissa after 12 minutes. So they played the majority of the game, Monaco, with only 10 men. But the fact that Inter have kept another clean sheet, that's their 20th clean sheet in all competitions this season. And we're only in January.
20th?
20th clean sheet in all competitions this season.
Wow. And whilst many of the other former winners like them in the competition will have 2 more games to try and get to the last 16, as Kevin mentioned, they're straight there, having finished fourth. Fifth in the end were Atleti after a 4-1 win away at Salzburg. Very impressive. Before this game, it's interesting listening to Diego Simeone talking about the new format and saying it. In the group stage, we knew that draws were okay, they were enough, but we have to go out and try and win every game, is what he said. And ultimately, they found a way with that very late winner 8 days ago against Leverkusen when they were down to 10 men and fought back, and then tonight beating Salzburg by 4-1. Leverkusen finishing sixth. Florian Wirtz, the player of the match again. 2-0 win away at Sparta. And we can hear now from, 2-0 home win at home to Sparta Praha. And we can hear from another forward, another very talented young forward, Nathan Teller.
It's good. I think it gives more opportunities for teams, and every game is difficult. Every game means something, like a league. So I like it, and you know, thankfully we're able to get to qualify and finish in the top eight. We knew we had to come in. The game was in our hands to win, and we knew if we won, we'd be in the top eight and automatically through. But we had to still show a mature performance. We created a lot of chances, and you know, ultimately we were happy with the win 2-0. So it's great.
Nathan Teller, one of Leverkusen's goal scorers, clearly enjoying the new league phase format. And Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso straight through to the round of 16. So, Mike Sewell, are Lille, and we have to talk about the French side, who started the night 12th.
Yeah, 12th position, in with a shout. A win would have guaranteed them a seeded spot in the playoffs, and could see them finish in the top eight. Those are the notes I made ahead of the game. But no one would have predicted them beating Feyenoord 6-1 in the end. I mentioned earlier that basically, had Atalanta scored, the fact that Lille scored that many goals kept them above Aston Villa in that seventh position in the end. They scored after 4 minutes through Ousmane Sarawi. And then the next two goals that they scored after Santiago Jimenez equalised quickly for Feyenoord were own goals. Gernot Trauner and David Hansko with own goals either side of halftime before Haraldsson, David and Cabella added three more later on in the second half. Final just falling apart in the end. But it's a remarkable achievement by Lille to finish in seventh spot, albeit by just the point in the end from Atalanta. But as I say, that 6-1 win could have come in very handy had Atalanta scored.
If you look at Lille's campaign in the league phase globally, it's been an incredible effort. I mean, to beat Real Madrid, to beat Atletico Madrid, and to put that many goals past Feyenoord, a Feyenoord team that beat Bayern München 3-0 last week. Mm-hmm. So that just shows you the quality of that performance. And I think Bruno Genesio has been around for a long, long time. I think people are starting to realise what a coach he is and the quality that he has. And he's matching wits with some of the best in Europe.
Yeah.
And he's overcoming them. Ancelotti, Simeone. So it is a wonderful effort from them.
Yeah, again, I think we're always going to learn a lot from this league phase. And because everyone plays a different set of fixtures, some, on paper at least, seem to have harder fixtures than others, just the luck of the draw. Lille, certainly, I mean, to go through in style, as you mentioned, that they face Real Madrid, Atleti, Juventus and Liverpool. You know, that's as hard as it comes. So great credit to Lille for going through 6-1. And as Mike said, on another night, had results elsewhere gone their way. Who knows where they might have finished. But to finish as high up as they did, very, very impressive. Seventh for them. Feyenoord ultimately have to settle for a position in 19th in the end. Aston Villa, the final club in the top eight. They started the night ninth, so another of the big winners, beating Celtic by 4-2. Morgan Rodgers, the UEFA Player of the Match, a remarkable season for him. And we can hear from his great friend now, the Villa midfielder Jacob Ramsey, who was talking moments after the full-time whistle.
Perfect night, 4-2 win and qualification top eight, so yeah, but the first 10 minutes at Aberfield was electric. You can hear it now. Top eight qualification. Morgan, hat-trick. What a note for him.
Lovely stuff. That is pure emotion there. And as you heard in the background, the cheer. Yeah, Morgan Rodgers with a hat-trick. He is some player. The young Englishman, only 22. And great friends with Jacob Ramsey, who's had a lot of injuries. But he's getting back to somewhere near his best. And Mike, for Aston Villa on their return to this competition, former winners, but it's been a long, long while since they've graced Europe's top table. To go straight through to the round of 16 is some achievement.
It is. I mean, they started outside the top eight on goal difference, as you say, in ninth position. But it wasn't as straightforward as it might seem, 4-2 and a hat-trick for Rodgers, because Rodgers scored his first two goals inside the first 5 minutes. The second of them is well worth a watch. A really good finish, a dipping shot into the corner of the net. But then Celtic, to their credit, fought back just before half-time. Adam Eder scored two goals of his own in the space of 2 minutes to make it 2-2 at half-time. And then, of course, it became rather tense in the second half. Ollie Watkins on the hour mark struck on a breakaway to make it 3-2. And then he had the chance to put the game beyond any doubt at the midway point of the second period, but slipped when he went to take a penalty, hitting the ball high over the crossbar, which kept Celtic in the game and, of course, kept everything tight in and around eighth position. And it wasn't until Rodgers got that injury time fourth, his third of the match, which confirmed Villa had got the 3 points and they'd done their job. They were just waiting on what was happening in Barcelona.
I feel like for Villa, more than most, finishing in the top eight is going to be really beneficial, because I think the feeling at Villa Park has been, certainly among the fan base, that the team, because it's fighting to qualify for next season's competition, but is also trying to make a hit in this season's tournament, it's been hard on the squad, in the sense that, you know, they've had some injuries, some players who, let's not forget, they went all the way to the semi-finals of the Conference League last season.
Yep.
So they've played a lot of games in the last couple of seasons. So for them to not play in that playoff round, I think is going to be really beneficial for them in terms of fitness, in terms of Unai Emery just kind of resetting them. So it's a real effort, because, you know, they've had some great nights at Villa Park, and that's what it's all about ultimately. You know, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that long ago, Villa were in the Championship, in the second tier
yep.
of English football, and here they are, one of the top eight teams in the Champions League.
Well, you mentioned Unai Emery, who knows a thing or two about winning a European yeah. trophy, doesn't he? And he is reflecting on the fact that they finished in the top eight.
Fantastic. When we won here at Bayern Munich, we focused as well the possibility to be contender to be in the top eight, because we started with two wins. And then, more or less, with the result we had in Bruges, with the result we had in Monaco, we were as well in risk to lose it. But, of course, today, again, we because for another team as well, it's not been easy. Real Madrid, even Bayern Munich, Juventus, PSG, they started as a contender to be favorite to be in the top eight, but they didn't get it. And, of course, we are very happy, and we, more or less, we are being consistent. And more or less as well, the challenge we have together, we did it. And today, with our support here at home, I think was fantastic where we achieved it here today.
Yeah, deserve great credit that Lille and Aston Villa, as he kind of mentioned, they're finishing above the likes of Real Madrid, Bayern, Milan, Manchester City, Juventus. Is some achievement over eight games and over an extended period of time. So that is the top eight. We've mentioned that Atalanta finished ninth in the end, just outside of the automatic progression point. Borussia Dortmund were another of those to finish on 15 points and just miss out, despite the fact that they beat Shakhtar 3-1. Shakhtar came into the night knowing they had to win and win big to have any chance of reaching the top 24, so their European adventure is over for the season. There was another big game in Guingamp in Brittany, where Brest were beaten 3-0 at home by Real Madrid. And we can hear from the UEFA player of the match, Jude Bellingham.
Kind of did what I always try and do. I was trying to be involved in all phases of play, attack the box, be around to create things, try and put my attackers in positions to make the difference, and try and defend and make some tackles as well, a little bit of everything. But the most important thing is the win. You know, doesn't matter who scores, assists, all that kind of thing. We're in a mood at the minute where we're enjoying playing with each other, and that's nice.
Jude Bellingham there. Mike, we mentioned how tight it was to get into the top eight, but there were a number of clubs who were either in it and then dropped out because of goals, or ultimately we'll look at the finishing league table and think, oh, we were just a point away from automatic progression.
Yeah, well, Dortmund, Real Madrid and Bayern München in particular will feel that they did everything too little too late in terms of trying to finish in the top eight. All three of those teams had two goal advantages in their games, but they were heavily reliant on what was happening above them in terms of Atalanta, Aston Villa, Lille and Leverkusen. 6, 7 and 8, Leverkusen, Lille and Villa finished on 16 points, and then the next five, 9 to 13, all finished on 15 points. And it really is incredible that you've got Dortmund, Real Madrid, Bayern München and Milan all together in 10th, 11th, 12th and 13th. And had Milan scored and got back and won that game that they played, they would have jumped into the top eight. It was crazy in the end. I mean, had they done that, we would have had a real... I said it was a bun fight, didn't I, before, to try and get in the top eight. But it's remarkable, really, how tight it was. Just 1 point between 6th and 13th.
Yeah, astonishing stuff. And Mike has done a terrific job all evening, bringing everybody up to date with the goings-on, who's in, who's out. Ultimately, we know the final shake-up, and the good thing is we can already start looking forward and plotting what's going to happen, because the draw for the knockout phase playoffs take place at 12 CET this Friday. That's the 31st of January. Those that finish between 9th and 16th seeded will face a team placed from 17th to 24th. The seeded team in principle is going to play the second leg at home. Potential opponents also predefined by a team's final league position. And then the eight clubs that prevail from the playoffs will go straight to the round of 16. And the brilliant thing, Richard Connolly, is that it begins in 13 days' time, Tuesday, the 11th of February. And with this new format, there's no great break now, really, between the end of a group stage and the beginning of the knockouts. We have a whole season of Champions League football. And we're beginning to look now at some of the potential playoff fixtures, and there are a couple of brackets which really stand out.
Yeah, so we're not going to know the exact matchups until Friday, but we can say from the teams that finish between 9th and 24th, well, you're going to play either this club or that club.
Yes.
There are two options for the teams that have got through. And this follows on from what Mike was saying. We've got this huge lump of tremendous teams with enormous experience all in the same area of the table between 9th and 16th, where you've got Atalanta, Dortmund, Real Madrid, Bayern, Milan, PSV, Paris and Benfica. So you can see there are teams there that are very close together. And I'm going to draw your attention in particular to Real Madrid 11th and Bayern München 12th. So the 11-12 pairing, that's Real Madrid and Bayern, they can't play each other. But what it means is that they'll be paired against the teams 21st and 22nd, Celtic and Manchester City.
Mm.
So Manchester City now know,
yes,
the euphoria of getting through, but their opponents in Friday's draw will be either Real Madrid again or Bayern München. So that is happening in the knockout phase playoff. Before we even get to the round of 16, we're going to get that enormous tie.
I nearly fell off the chair when he read me that bracket out just after we we finished the main commentary. I mean, it's so exciting that, because Manchester City, you know, it's not long between now and then. It's not as if they can suddenly... No. You know, have loads of time to get back to what they feel they should be at in terms of the level. So it's going to be a really tremendous set of ties. That Celtic, I actually think, I know some people will look at it and say, oh, we're going to get Real Madrid or Bayern. I feel like that's their reward for what they've done in this tournament so far.
Yeah.
And at home, they'll feel they can take anybody on. And I'm so impressed by the way they've bounced back, because they went to Dortmund and they lost 7-1. And you just thought, how are they going to bounce back from that? And yet, at home, they've been tremendous. But the game that really stood out for me was when they went to Bergamo and got a 0-0 draw with Atalanta, because it would have been so easy to just fold after what had happened in Dortmund, and they've deserved their place.
Rich, I'm going to try and trump your bracket with my bracket.
Cool. Yes.
Because...
Bracket wars.
13th and 14th, Milan and PSV, they can't play each other, could play 19th and 20th, Feyenoord or Juve. So you could technically have Feyenoord against PSV and Juve against Milan.
Yeah, that's right. If you get the all-Italian tie, then you get the all-Dutch tie
exactly.
as well. And to complicate that even further, theoretically, because the winners of those sections will face either Arsenal or Inter. You could theoretically get Milan versus Juve with the winner ending up facing Inter in the round of 16. That is theoretically possible.
I've got another bracket, actually, because Paris Saint-Germain look like they are guaranteed to face Ligue 1 opposition.
Yes, they will.
Either Monaco or Brest. Absolutely loving this new format.
Can we play these now? Do we have to wait?
Well, it's not
a couple
long.
Of weeks? I know, but can we play them tomorrow, maybe?
Benfica are the fourth team in that section, so Benfica will play Monaco or Brest as well, and you can work that out. And go on, Kevin, you've got your finger in the air.
No, it's just you mentioned Benfica, and I think it's a salient point. There was quite a lot of talk in Portuguese media ahead of this set of games that this could be disastrous for Portuguese football, because you could have had Sporting go out, could have had Benfica go out, yeah. And they've both got through.
Yeah.
And
that's
actually a major boost, I think, for the Primeira Liga. And you have to give it to Sporting as well, because they lost Ruben Amorim to Manchester United. João Pereira stepped up from the B team, only lasted 6 weeks, and Rui Borges has come in from Guimarães and has been able to get them over the line. So that's a decent effort, considering that's been a club in flux for the last few weeks.
And also they were behind against Bologna, dropping out, so to show that resolve and character,
yeah,
ultimately
absolutely.
To go through, congratulations to them. I mean, it has been a remarkable, compelling night. I've got a very difficult question to ask all three of you. I don't mind who goes first.
Okay.
But I've been asked to ask you your moment of the night.
Oh, wow. Moment of the night. That's a brilliant question.
I mean, I think, and forgive me if you're listening to this with a Man City hat on, it would probably be Club Brugge's goal just shortly before half-time.
Yeah.
Because it was a real stunning moment. It was a moment of immense quality, and it really shook things up. It shook City to their core. They knew that the task had got greater. It forced them to be at their absolute best in the last 45 minutes to produce something special to get through. And the roar that the crowd delivered as the players emerged from the tunnel for the start of the second half, that was one of those classic European roars. We know we're up against it, but come on, right behind you for one final push. So that goal from Club Brugge really set that all up.
I'll say the completion of Ousmane Dembele's hat-trick for Paris, because I think they've played with real personality in the last couple of games. 2-0 down against City, everything was being questioned. The project, the young players, the coach, they came through that, they won the game. This one going away to Stuttgart, you know, really vociferous support for Stuttgart from their fans. You thought that's going to be a really tricky game, and they just blew Stuttgart away. I think they're a live contender in this tournament, because the way they work as a unit, the young players learning all the time, Paris are a real danger, I think.
Off the pitch, watching Aston Villa's players in a huddle over a smartphone, and Brugge's players and management also have a smartphone, just to see where they were going to end up was interesting. But on the pitch, I think the emphatic nature in which Lille beat Feyenoord 6-1 to book their place in the round of 16, that's the standout for me.
Mike, Kevin, Richard, thank you very much. A final word of the night, I think. Let's have Pep Guardiola's thoughts, because City ultimately were perhaps the story, ultimately just about making it through.
I think the first half was so academic, but we missed the spark. I think Savinho helped us, like all the season when he played there, was unbelievable. So he changed the game, because in after 5-10 minutes, created 2 or 3 corners, our crowd react, and we have the chances. But you know, for the way they played that way, Bruges had more chances the second half than the first. But the first half, in that situation where they are so tight, they defend man-to-man marking, we need the quality, the spark of one player, make the individual action to score, and we miss it. Maybe for the felt the pressure, maybe because we are not... We felt it in the second half. When you said sometimes you are winning 2-3-0 and you are scared to lose what you are winning. And when you are 1-0 down, you are out of the Champions League. Nothing to do, and the people, the players won that. But we did it, we are there. In 2 weeks we'll be better than we are right now, because new players come back, new signs. Against these two giants, one of them we're going to play.
He already knows the brackets. Pep Guardiola, that's all we have time for. What a league phase, what a finish to it. And already we're looking ahead to the first knockout phase playoff matches. We're back on Tuesday, the 11th of February. Our coverage underway from 2045 CT. Make sure you join us. But for now, from me, Chris Parrott, and the rest of the Match Day Live team, it is goodbye.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Champions League podcast.